Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, before addressing this Honorable House, I want to again thank the people of Castro South for the honor of electing me to represent them in this Honorable House. Indeed, being elected as MP for Castro South is the highest honor that the people can bestow upon me. And it is that they have reposed in me their hopes and their aspirations to achieve for them and their children what has so far not yet been done. Madam Speaker, I want to ask for your permission to also extend greetings to a particular young lady, Anna Mayers, who is still at home. I want to tell her that she's in our prayers, and I trust that God will lavish her with his grace and will be contained within his peace. Madam Speaker, every 5 years, we seem to go through what we call a political storm in this country. A storm that destroys everything in its way. Because it's like the hurricane season. Every time it comes, it destroys whatever progress has been made, and then we have to rebuild what was done before. Madam Speaker, there's a lot of petty politics, personal vendettas, the school children mentality that plagues the politics of this country. It is like children were fighting among themselves, looking to see who could be given more recognition. Madam Speaker, I think a small young country like ours, we need to get away from that sort of politics. Our country has too few resources for us to spend time cutting each other and spending time downplaying some of the things that have been achieved over a period of time. We need for each successive administration to build on the work of previous administration, to speak about what is done properly, to speak about what is done badly. But if someone were to come into this country, or as it is, listen through the internet to what's going on in this house, sometimes you wonder whether or not there's anything good that has happened in St. Lucia in the last 10 years. In the firm speech, Madam Speaker, we were asked whether gone the times when nations battled for the selling of the West, gone the days when strife and discord deemed the children's toil and rest. The question is, are we still fighting, Madam Speaker? Much, Madam Speaker, has been said about the victory at the polls after December 11th. Many people attribute this victory to special dispensation and invocation by Almighty God. I caution members of us to stop this practice. This is bordering on taking the name of the Lord in vain. You know, our God and Father is a loving God. He's not a God of UWPs or SLPs. He's a God of all peas. Let us stop pretending that God in special dispensation has created this government. He has God appoints leaders, he does. But he doesn't meddle in the affairs of men so as to say he wants the UWP in power or the new party in power. He appoints leaders. And God is a caring God. And I want us to stop this by trying to invoke the name of God at every turn as if it is only one party in this country that prays. Sometimes I wonder if I pray. Because then the elections were won on prayer. Members of the government side also have likened the prime ministers to Moses and Abraham. You know, Madam Speaker, I do not believe that such comparisons must be entered into lightly. Moses was described by God as the most humble of men. And Abraham was called the friend of God. The Prime Minister in his budget address stated that like Moses, he will take the people to the mountaintop and he will show them the promised land. But the Prime Minister knows very well that Moses never showed the children of Israel the promised land. You know, we have to set the biblical record straight. And it is in Deuteronomy 29-34, it says that when the children of Israel had reached the land of Moab, Moses spoke with them about what they should do, how they should treat what God had done for them, having taken them out of bondage from Egypt. And what Moses told them is that if they forget the God who had taken them from bondage, that the very God would forget them. Then Moses left the children of Israel. He climbed Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah. And there, God showed Moses the promised land. God showed Moses the promised land. And he said, you, Moses, will not enter the promised land, but the children will enter. That's what happened. And God buried Moses right there. Nobody knows the grave. So I wanted to stop this thing about trying to use scripture and invoking God. God is not to be mocked, you know. He has to be given due recognition. Let us be true to the account as stated in the Word of God. Now, I've been hearing this thing about our country divided into four quadrants. But within the budget itself, while I've been told this quadrant, Mother Speaker, within the budget, we keep hearing about a five quadrant. Even my dear friend from the Henry North mentioned five quadrants. I'm shocked. I know the mathematics teachers in this country who are trying very hard to teach our young people mathematical concepts like quadrants. Quad, meaning four? Why would I have about five areas where I have four quadrants? Let us just rethink this, because we are talking wrong terminology to our young mathematical minds. I think that was just a mistake. I want to believe so. It's a mistake. Madam Speaker, in the Minister of Finance's budget address on page 52, it was stated, and I read, page 52, it says, the call for and pursuit of universal secondary education was noble and necessary, but it was hastily implemented without adequate thought and planning. I think that statement is mischievous and misleading to say the least. Both the SLP and the United Workers Party, in their manifestos of 1997, alluded to the idea of getting St. Lucia to the point where universal secondary education would have been achieved by the year 2001. After the general elections of 1997, the St. Lucia Labour Party government embarked on a plan that would prepare the education system to realize the objective of attaining universal secondary education. An elaborate training project was initiated in collaboration with the Institute of Business at UWI, where all heads of departments, yes, IOB, that was what it was called among teachers in this country, yours truly was a participant, where all heads of departments of the Ministry of Education, principals and vice principals of all schools, including senior teachers at the primary schools. If there was, because most primary schools, as we know, those who don't know, most primary schools do not have vice principals. But I think there's only one primary school with a vice principal in this country, Dimple at Louise. But the point I'm making is that all these leaders in education were given training by IOB through the government of St. Lucia in school management and supervision. The program commenced in November of 1999 and lasted until July of 2001. That was in preparation for universal secondary education. What the government was doing at the time was giving the leaders of education in this country, giving the leaders of education in this country the opportunity to prepare themselves to function when universal secondary education would have come in. The program was extensive and thorough, giving participants relevant and up-to-date skills in the management and supervision of schools. Madam Speaker, I've already said that I was part of this program as vice principal at St. Mary's College at the time, and I saw the importance of that program. Yes, it may have been a vision by the last administration prior to 1997. Nothing must be taken away from successive governments, as I said earlier. But we have to stop using statements that are providing mischief to this country. Madam Speaker, the preparations did not end there. The government introduced in the intervening period a new Comprehensive Education Act, 1999, and embarked on the formulation for the first time in education circles in St. Lucia, an education sector development plan, 2001-2005, 5-year period. This plan saw input from all stakeholders in this country. Even teachers who were supposed to be at some of these meetings, they used that time to do other things. But teachers also accepted that opportunity to make their contribution. Parents were involved, all stakeholders, as I said. It was broad and extensive consultation, and that was under the Labour Party government in preparation to enhance and strengthen the education system. Madam Speaker, more preparations and planning by the Ministry of Education for the appointment, for the first time again, of Deputy Chief Education Officers in planning, Deputy Chief Education Officers in instruction. A novel idea to the St. Lucian education system. Madam Speaker, there was also the appointment of officers, education officers, with special responsibility for TVET, as the Minister of Education just pointed out. TVET is Technical Vocational Educational Training. There were also education officers for special ed, and the appointment of vice principals in every secondary school. Also, Madam Speaker, the government went beyond that. They appointed counselors, guidance counselors in every secondary school. The Minister of Education just alluded to that. Because the government was aware that with universal secondary education, or as we got modernized, that there would be a need for our people, our children in school, to get counseling. Madam Speaker, more importantly, even as we speak, those guidance counselors, are already doing graduate work in their field. Because generally in fields, up to the clinical counseling and so on, clinical areas counseling, people don't practice without graduate degrees. They have to practice with graduate degrees. So, again, I want to say, it's mischievous to say it was hastily implemented when the very government today said they wanted to achieve it by 2001. I must agree that probably I said, the principals of the schools were not told enough about it. And I must agree that probably they needed to have a little more information as to the exact date of the implementation. But we must not provide mischief when we come with statistics. In fact, I have decided not to quote too much statistics right here in this speech that I make today. Because I know the importance of statistics, and I know how much mischief you can cause with statistics. You know, I just remember that, Madam Speaker, in the early 1990s, while I was a teacher of mathematics at St. Mary's College, we had done excellent in mathematics at 82%. And we were gloating, you know, teachers. And eventually the school said, no, but St. Mary's College is talking about you'll have 82%. We have 100% in mathematics. And I said, okay, show me the facts. But whatever, St. Mary's College offered mathematics at general level to about 120 students. And you get 80% of these. The other school offered one child with general mathematics and got 100% pass. And you try to tell me you quit statistics. I don't quote statistics that lightly, Madam Speaker. Quoting statistics is dangerous sometimes. Give us the facts. Because I've heard a lot of statistics quoted in this house about the level of poverty without telling me how you're going to address that level of poverty in this country. Madam Speaker, I continue talking about how USC was planned for. By December 2005, Madam Speaker, the Ministry of Education had already prepared or produced its educational development sector plan for the years 2006 to 2007. Is that a ministry under Labour government that was not ready in education? A whole year before 2005, showing how serious and organized Britain was the government in its pursuit of excellence in the delivery of educational services in this nation. Madam Speaker, all these activities and planning were complemented with the building of some 7 new schools, the Angers, the Pierre, the Babono. Because these 3, and again, I want to show, these 3, the first 3 schools, were already planned by the then administration of the United Workers Party. Now, I'm being very honest because I want members of this House to be honest. And I think the Labour government made it abundantly clear that they had begun that work before 1997. But the government of the Labour Party went on to build Dufort Technical School, the Cicero, a state-of-the-art school, Cicero Secondary. The 2 schools, Marilo and Grosley, are almost completed, as well as the expansion, renovation and refurbishment of existing school plants. From 12 secondary schools in 1997, Madam Speaker, to 20 by the academic year 2006-2007. Is that a government that did not plan for universal secondary education? In less than 10 years, you increase, notice, you increase by about 67%. I said I was not quoting statistics to mislead. That's what I said. And y'all be very careful, Mr. Honorable Member from Babuna. I can run you around statistics very easily. Be careful, be careful. But from 12 to 20, Madam Speaker. How can one say that the last administration did not plan? That's been hypocritical. That's been mischievous. Madam Speaker, these activities were also accompanied by the constant renovation of existing primary schools, as well as the building of the state-of-the-art primary school in the Union area to put an end to the shift system after some 26 years. You know, I grew up in this country like most of us. And I said most because some of us did not necessarily grow up in this country. And that's nothing wrong with that. But I went for the shift system, Madam Speaker. That shift system deprived a lot of our young children, Madam Speaker, of the sort of education they needed. It took a Labour government after 26 years to put an end to the shift system in this country. How can anyone say that this government did not plan for universal secondary education? Madam Speaker, there seems to be, I just want to digress from my own prepared speech. It seems to me that people suggest that because a child gets 9 marks, that child is not fit to get a universal, to get secondary education. Secondary education should become a right like primary education. Yes, we must capitalize on the gains of secondary education. That doesn't mean we have to deprive students of secondary education because they get low marks. It is too early in a child's life to determine what that child will do because the child got 9 marks. Some of the members sitting here may have done worse than some of these children in this before secondary school. So we must not do that because at different age, at different times in person's lives, they excel at different things. So we have to show that we understand the significance of giving a child a secondary education. Madam Speaker, there is a host of other projects and initiatives that were undertaken in the drive towards universal secondary education. Madam Speaker, I trust that you can understand why I thought that the statement that the universal secondary education was hastily implemented without adequate thought and planning is mischievous and misleading. Yes, Madam Speaker, there are problems and challenges. The problems and challenges are inevitable with any major change in educational circles. But these problems and challenges are not insurmountable. In the face of globalization, the CSME, an ever-increasing population, secondary education is the least any government can be expected to provide for its citizens. Madam Speaker, there is ample evidence available for the cautious, careful, diligent, and prudent researcher in ascertaining that the last administration was deliberate and calculating in the attainment of universal secondary education. According to the immediate past Minister of Education and Human Resource Development, Mr. Larry Mitchell, it is better to have to make adjustments and provide corrective measures for the attendant problems and challenges associated with universal secondary education than to have to deny thousands of St. Lucian children the opportunity of enjoying the secondary education. Not providing universal secondary education is elitist. A lot of my friends from the primary school were denied an education. That was a secondary education. Today I stand as testimony to fight on their behalf. We all should be proud of this achievement, that is the achievement of universal secondary education. I encourage honorable members of this house to get more information about this. You probably need to read an article in the Voice of March 6, 2007 by the minister, then Minister of Education, Yari Mari Michel, because nobody can refute the evidence that is in this article. Speaker, I move to the issue of an education task force. Speaker, the commissioning of an education task force with the objective of reviewing the universal secondary education system and to make recommendations for modifications and improvements, and the plan to make South and Louis Community College a full-fledged university are commendable. But I must warn the administration that USC is a process, it's not an event. You cannot assess a process in the first 4 months. Why is there such haste in assessing USC? It is only for political gain we're doing this. We want to deny the fact that the Labour Party saw its feet to attain universal secondary education. We have to stop this. It's not an event. You only assess events when they're finished. Processes, you wait. You must give it time. Let us see what happens before we start assessing USC. We have to go out there in the Caribbean, look at what has happened to USC in the other islands, come back and see how we can avoid the same problems that we see in the other islands. Maybe there has been a commission to go out there to look at U.S. in the other islands, but have we been told what are some of the problems and challenges that we need to avoid? U.S. is a process, Madam Speaker. It's not an event. And we must not fight that political game. Madam Speaker, when an education task force is set up, there are two characteristic features which will always be in the inclusion, possible, or you can see it, You will see the inclusions of persons at the forefront of research in the area on the review. And you will see adequate and appropriate representation of the major stakeholders in that sector. I'm happy to see the inclusion of knowledgeable and capable educators from the Division of Teacher Education and Educational Administration of St. Louis Community College on the task force. But where are the representatives of the National Principals Association? Did the government not think they were worth being on that task force? Where are the representatives of St. Lucia Teachers Union on that task force? Speaker, I suggest that this task force is too politically inclined. Madam Chairman, or Madam Speaker, I hear the Minister of Education talk about NVQs. I must let the Minister of Education know, yeah, we are aware of NVQs, but this process has been in train long before this government. This is not an issue that has to happen to each individual island. The Caribbean Examination Council, and the subject qualification that we generally call CXC, is what we call CSEC, the Caribbean Secondary Education Certificate. Generally, it goes into areas of academics and technical areas. But the NVQs, CXC, along with the governments of the Caribbean, have been talking about NVQs for a while now. So these are not initiatives from this government. These are initiatives from the governments of the Caribbean along with CXC, the Caribbean Examination Council. Well, speaker, I want to tell you that I must commend you, this is Mr. Minister, for continuing the book rental scheme. Because that was one of the things that the Labour Party noticed would have been important if you introduced universal secondary education, because there are children whose parents cannot provide for them with books in this country. So the Labour Party planned, and they planned well. Let's give them credit. And I give the United Women's Party credit for having started some of these issues. Because I remember as early as 1996, I was a then facilitator of mathematics for teacher training in preparation for the very same USC. And speaker, I don't come here green, not knowing what happened in education. I've been involved at all levels of education in this country. My 22 years did not go as a waste. I was aware of what's happening in this country. Let me tell the ministry the way ahead for education in this country. I think the minister, speaker, the ministry should, I have said, they need to be applauded and commended as a government for looking into South CC, that is Sir Arthur Lewis Community College. But before you can move to Arthur Lewis Community College into a full-fledged university, I think, Madam Speaker, you need to kick out the sixth form from Sir Arthur. Sixth form education is not tertiary level education. Sixth form education is secondary education. So one of the things that this government should do, and I told them so very early, I'm sure a lot of them have this copy of this little booklet that I produced sometime in August. I'll make it available to you, Mr. King. Sorry, I want to remember what Castro is now. I said to the people of St. Lucia that before we can move SAFA any further, we need to get the rid of the sixth form of SAFA. How do you do that? You expand the present base at the secondary school. Because the sixth form belongs to the secondary school. This is where it was, like St. Mary's College, yeah? In parts of it that's here at Beaufort. But sixth form education is taking about one third of the space at SAFA. So we need to move the sixth form from SAFA. And when we've done so, we'll be ready to begin to think of SAFA in terms of full-fledged university. Any minister of education by the stroke of a pen can make SAFA a university, full-fledged university. But there are a lot of issues, Madam Speaker. There are issues of articulation. How are you going to talk about, are we ready, are we prepared, do we have enough qualified people? A university does not need just first-degree people, you know. Universities need trained people. St. Lucia does have a lot of trained people, but we have not. I don't think we have done enough at the moment where we can beat our chest and think that it is time that we just move 3 years. We have to plan. That's where the planning comes. So I implore, I really as the minister, to begin to push for moving the sixth form back to the secondary school. Very good. But I think the whole idea of moving the sixth form back to secondary school is not that difficult, because I think the Ministry of Education over the last few years, they were looking into it. So it would be very easy, Mr. Minister, to talk to the Deputy Chief Education Officer of Planning in the Ministry and to ask him about such moves undertaken by the last government. Speaker, also in this little booklet, I did tell the government of St. Lucia and the people of St. Lucia what I would have done if I had been asked to serve as a Minister of Education. Madam Speaker, we talk about crime in this country. We talk about the lawlessness, the loitering around our streets by young children. Our fifth form and fourth form students must be made more productive. We need to involve a community service program in the schools where the young people of form four and form five, before they graduate, one of the requirements would be that they give 120 hours of community service in this country. On afternoons, instead of lining on St. Louis Street, instead of lining along Chaussee Road, they could be involved in civic groups in this country, the health centers, they can be at the Red Cross. This is the way ahead, Mr. Minister. And we can do that together. You see, there is a...
Honorable Member, just a quick reminder that you address the chair of all time.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, yes. Maybe in my enthusiasm to tell the Minister of Education, I address my apologies. But I think it will make good work if the government would think, instead of the cuts I heard about without any direction or to tell me what it is about, these are some of the things, Madam Speaker, that we need to address. Because a lot of the crime committed are committed among the youth of this country. We need to pay attention to them. Madam Speaker, we need to train more secondary education teachers and secondary school teachers. Yes, that's true. SAHSA has begun moving in that direction. We probably, Madam Speaker, in particular need to give incentives, a package incentive, to secondary teachers who want to go into mathematics and science. There is a need for this area. We keep crying about it every year, but yet we do not do anything in that direction. Madam Speaker, we need to move in that direction. I think the primary teachers program is saturated. We have a lot of primary trained teachers in this country. I'm not saying we should not train anymore, because you always have to train, but our emphasis now must be on secondary training in this country. Now, there's a lot of misinformation, Madam Speaker, about the teacher's salary. I can go back 23 years when I was at Teachers College, 23 years ago, and talk that it has always been a policy of government not to pay teachers who came into the service straight out of school. That's always been. My very cousin was at Teachers College with me, straight out of St. Joseph's Convent. Never received a salary. Madam Speaker, more so, it is the principals of schools who generally have the right to appoint teachers who are going on to Teachers College as members of the staff so that they can receive a salary from the government. You don't receive a salary from the government just because you go to Teachers College. You receive a salary if you're appointed to a school. Madam Speaker, the ministry officials need to inform the government on how these things are done. And I know almost all the men and women at the Ministry of Education who have anything to do about these issues will know the truth. But as the Prime Minister said in his earlier speech, we need to speak the truth, and the truth will set us free. Madam Speaker, as we move south to expanding its program, there will be that sort of trend in education where people will come straight out of secondary school into teacher training. Are you going to be able to fund everybody who comes straight out of secondary school into teacher training? What are you going to do, Madam Speaker? We need to cut recurrent expenditure in this country. Education is a very expensive enterprise. But I must say, ignorance is a lot more expensive than education. Madam Speaker, the subsidies that we talked about, if the Labour Party government introduced universal secondary education, it means that there isn't really too much of a need for too much subsidy. Because every community in this country now, their constituency, has a secondary school. That means when a parent chooses to send a child to St. Mary's College only from Gifford, that parent is saying, look, that's my choice. So I will pay the bus fare for that child. Because by providing universal secondary education, you are minimizing or you're cutting down on the cost to the government of moving children across the country. I am not totally against the subsidy. I will never say I'm against it. There are parents who want the child to have a train at St. Mary's College or St. Joseph's Convent, and they may not be able to. But I think we need to relook, Madam Speaker, as to how we do this. Yes, we need to relook into it. Madam Speaker, I want to move my attention a little away from education into national security and home affairs. In the issue of Friday, April 6th of the Mirror, St. Lucia Mirror, it's reported that the Commissioner of Police in this country said that the rates of crime rate has dropped specifically because of the effort of the last government in putting resources into the police force. Also, by bringing this British police into this country. Speaker, we are beginning to see the impact of the last administration's effort in curbing the crime problem in this country. Crime should never be an issue used for political advantage. It is an issue that affects all of us. And no politician, no political party should dance around the political platform making the crime issue a political football. None of us in this honorable house should be happy with the crime situation. Most of it should be one of those areas that all politicians, all church groups, all civic groups, we should be talking about how we can stem that problem in this country. I warn the member for Anthony Canaries to stop making crime an issue of the past. Because next year he will have to report to this house what he has done to alleviate the problems of crime in this country. Madam Speaker, I will not even continue so much on the crime issue because I said it's not a political issue. Let's talk about health. Health issues and health. Madam Speaker, it is amazing that whenever some heinous, despicable crime is committed in this country, such as the carnage that took place in the Castro's Cathedral in 2000, one of the first arguments generally put forward by the media, talk shows, and other commentaries is that the individuals who may have perpetrated this crime are victims of mental disorders. The lawyers of this country, or the lawyers generally who represent some of the perpetrators of this crime, usually call for, they say, insanity. And they use that as currency to get some of their clients off. But Madam Speaker, I want to think that this is the empathy. These lawyers are approaching it in an empathetic way to say, well, we feel sorry for these people. But Madam Speaker, to hear the Prime Minister in his budget speech address talk about the current construction of the new psychiatric hospital as a big show by the SLP is a bit pathetic and an insult to the people of St. Lucia, a slap in the face of the PRC, the People's Republic of China, who is funding the project. One would have thought that the Prime Minister would see the construction of the facility as an investment in the mental and emotional well-being of our people. Because by having such a facility, one would expect more persons to make use of that facility in order to reduce on instances of mental illness in this country. Madam Speaker, there's a problem. Maybe there's a problem with the psychiatric hospital because of where it is located. Maybe it is prime land and it should not be there. It's a wonderful environment, Madam Speaker, to have a mental institution. The people can look across the bluish waters of the Caribbean Sea and relax. You know, green is the color of God. For all the men who seem to be talking, the color of God is green. If you really have a headache, honorable member, Fonslery, Canaries, you probably just need to watch a green in the forest. You really get some relief. Green, the color of God. It's wonderful, you know. Madam Speaker, are we contented to have that dilapidated structure called Golden Hope? The place where those among us who, because of various factors and circumstances, find we need some place to get emotional and mental rehabilitation? As a nation, we have not learned to separate checking on mental health and emotional being from being mad or crazy. There is a stigma, Madam Speaker, attached to these issues involving mental and emotional health in this country. We need to be more humane and compassionate. Yes, Madam Speaker, the Honorable Minister of Health and Member for Castro's North, while visiting the premises of the new psychiatric hospital, stated that the facility was a good and necessary investment. And I commend him for that. Therefore, I expect him, the Honorable Minister, to turn to the Prime Minister during his contribution to the budget and ask him to apologize to the nation for the callous comments associated with the psychiatric hospital. And Speaker, We were told that there were geotechnical reports that showed that the ground where the psychiatric hospital was built was sound. My information, I did a little research, and I found that there were three independent reports carried out. One called the Strata, by Strata Engineering, one by the People's Republic of China, and one then by the EU site appraisal team. All three of them found that there might be issues, Madam Speaker, with the present site. But they told the government how to go around these issues. So there was no technical problem with the foundation of the land at, actually I think Castrosov, you know, at the area. Because you see all the mansions that will come up in Castrosov soon?
Yeah.
There won't be any technical problems there. So there's no problem with our hospitals. Madam Speaker, technology can correct problems that we find out when we carry out studies. Madam Speaker, attempting to modernize a small country such as ours necessitates that the government begin to plan for the social well-being of the people. Madam Speaker, the last administration was aware that VH is over, Victoria's Secret, over 100 years old. And to have VH as your number one, your premier health facility, is doing a disservice to the generations that would come in this country. We need to treat our people with more dignity and respect. Madam Speaker, I may look like a young man today, but tomorrow I may need the services of a general hospital. I'm not too happy every time I go to VH. I took my grandmother to VH 2 weeks ago. It took her about 6 hours to get out. We need a new general hospital, and the vision of the last administration was to plan for a new hospital. No, Madam Speaker, to hear the Prime Minister carrying on about the new general hospital, trying to say it was not needed at this time, one would wonder how caring a leader he is. The Prime Minister seems to have a fetish for tunnels and underground constructions, you know. He seems to have that. The Prime Minister can say to this nation that it is imperative for us to build a new highways and byways, but he does not appreciate the importance of investment that will cater to the social, emotional, and well-being and the health of the people of this country. Speaker, 2 weeks ago, or even less than that, we were told by health authorities in this country that St. Lucia has the highest incidence of diabetes in the world. Whether it is true or not, we ought to be concerned, because the attendant problems and challenges associated with these silent killer diseases mean that more health facilities will become necessary in the future. Thanks to an SLP administration, including universal health care, and encouraging St. Lucians to get tested, we in this country found the status of our people's health, because we plan and prepare accordingly. Only a compassionate administration will make the medication for the silent killer diseases, diabetes and hypertension, free to the citizens of this country. The administration of the St. Lucia Labour Party have always put emphasis on social programs of this country. All of us need to applaud the last administration for the foresight that it showed in addressing the whole idea of USC for St. Lucians. Just Saturday afternoon, again, I was sitting with one of my constituents, and she was saying she's so grateful that government saw it fit to make the medication free, because she doesn't know how she would have paid for it. Madam Speaker, I think the Honorable Leader of the Opposition, along with all his ministers of the last administration, should take a bow to having introduced universal health care and USC, universal secondary education, to this country. It is an achievement by the last administration. What this administration must do is to build on it. I must also say the psychiatric hospital built by the generosity of the People's Republic of China and the new hospital are visionary projects of the last administration. And they ought to be commended for having the courage to plan for the future health and emotional well-being of the country. I take this opportunity to thank also the People's Republic of China for their generosity. every chance for the former ministers of health under the St. Luke Labour Party administration for the determination shows in tackling issues of health and well-being in this country. Ministers, I did not say minister. Both ministers. Let me move in the last 15 minutes, Madam Speaker, to my constituency. Madam Speaker, I listened to speaker after speaker from the government side of this Honorable House talk about the levels of poverty in this country. By just quoting the statistics on poverty will not change the circumstances of the people of this country. Our aims and responsibility as leaders in this country are to find solutions to some of the circumstances that lead to poverty and indigence. Madam Speaker, the acquisition and ownership of land in this country is one of the biggest problems facing our people. In Castro-Sav, Madam Speaker, most of the people do not own land, the lands upon which they live. From Poasho to Banan, to Lato, to Cicero, to Goodland, to Ticolong, to Basta Joseph, to La Flamingo, Mon Road, to Marigo. Most of the people of Castro-Sav have one common problem of that of not owning the land upon which they live. Mind you, most of these people have been living on these lands for at least two generations. It was with this in mind that the St. Luke Labour Party, in its manifesto 2006, entitled Renewing Our Pledge, on page 53 states, and I look at page 53, Madam Speaker, page 53 says, I read, on the land and housing development, the means by which land is developed and has profound consequences for the future development of the communities. Our government has pursued a policy during its first 2 terms of systematically increasing the house stock in the island, with particular emphasis on low and middle income housing. We have also sought through our revolutionary program for the rationalization of unplanned development, that's proud, to make land available to the poorer segments of our community, by making it possible for them to gain title to government lands on which they have squatted for years. The positive spin-off from this program have been tremendous. And there's a lot of information about what the Labour Party intended to do for the people of this country if it was returned to a third term of government, to show that it would have given the people of this country some of the crown lands in this country. And I'll talk a little about crown lands in the last 5 minutes. And I must say that I commended also the United Workers Party for taking a lift, something out of the Labour Party manifesto here. When you created a new ministry and you called it Ministry of Housing, Urban Renewal, come from the Labour Party's manifesto, very good. That's what you must do. Build on that. Urban Renewal. And look, because I think we need to learn from each other. We are a small country and we need to stop playing the political game. One can see that, Madam Speaker, that the St. Luke Labour Party administration was keen and ready, in a possible third term, as I said, to make land and housing available to its people. Land gives you title to something, Madam Speaker, and that's an issue for us. The Poasho case is a clear one, Madam Speaker. Poasho is not the making of the St. Luke Labour Party. Poasho is a making of the United Workers Party administration of past years. Because, and that's my constituency, some of the people of Poasho in this very manifesto, the government of the St. Luke Labour Party had intentions to relocate them. I hope that this government continues on that program. Some of the people in that constituency, they need to be moved. They need to own lands for themselves. Most of the lands that they own, they are on squatting at the moment, belong to SLASPA. So these people need lands. And the government of St. Lucia, under the SLP administration, had begun addressing that issue. So I am saying to the government, I hope that continues and that we can work to see these people get their due respect. The Marigo case, and I talk about land. Madam Speaker, You would not want to believe that within 2 months of a new administration, the Minister of Housing would have identified lands in Marigo, a project already planned with 115 units, he tells us yesterday in this house. Lands that were set aside by the then Labour administration for the people of Marigo to build their homes because they've been living in these areas for years. And as you know, Marigo is a big tourist area. A lot of upscale development has taken place in Marigo, but not for the people of Marigo. And the Minister for Housing knows about these areas. But within 2 months of a new administration, that the government, and I need to put that in context, this very land where this housing is going to be done is where the Sinuluka Labour Party had first thought about putting the psychiatric hospital. But the people of Marigo at the time, they resisted that effort along with the then parliamentary representative, Mr. John Oblom. And the government considered, the government said, okay, we'll leave it alone. We are going to leave this land for you. And we're going to give you this land so you can have your home built on this land.
Remember, you have 10 more minutes.
Thank you.
Complete the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I'm happy that the Minister of Housing is coming back in to head it. Because, as I said, and I want him to head, because I do like Mr. Carrier, the information, Madam Speaker. Okay, very good, Mr. Honourable Member. Within 2 months, you identify land in Marigo, and the people, I heard the Minister say he's listening to the cries of the people, but the people of Marigo have asked the Minister to have a meeting with, through the Marigo Development Committee, to have a meeting with the parliamentary rep to discuss the issue. But
Honourable Minister for
Housing. Madam Speaker, on a point of correction, I would like the member, the Honourable Member, to tell me which members have asked me to have a, to have a meeting with him. I don't know anything about that, Madam Speaker.
Madam Speaker, through letters sent. Madam Speaker, the people of Marigo have made it clear to those who have addressed them that they would like a meeting with the authorities to discuss the issue. Madam Speaker, on that very land that is now proposed for the development in Marigo, a human resource development center was planned for the people of Marigo. Madam Speaker, I want the Minister of Housing to know that when you relocate people, when you disturb, take lands that people could use for housing, because the people of Marigo would never be able to pay for housing of $190,000. The government ought to make these lands available to the people, not build houses and invite people to come into Marigo. Madam Speaker, this is a political plan to destabilize the political balance in Marigo. Madam Speaker, I do not need an invitation from the Honourable Member to come to discussion because I don't gain from this. I'm speaking to the people on behalf of my people, and the Minister knows exactly what I'm talking about. Without any consultation, the Minister enters the housing project without consulting the people of Marigo. These are lands that could be used for this crown land, Madam Speaker. It's crown land.
Madam Speaker, ask the member to be guided by what he knows as fact. He's saying that I did a development, I'm commencing a development without consulting the people of Marigo. How does he know that? You cannot be speculating in this Honourable House Member.
Honourable Member for Kansi Central. Honourable Minister for Housing, what exactly is the point that you wish the Member for Kansi South to elucidate, to explain, to provide information on? What is the basis?
Can the member tell this Honourable House how he knows that I undertook a development without consulting the people of Marigo?
Madam Speaker, precisely because I'm the parliamentary representative for Kansi South. My people tell me what goes on. There's a Marigold Development Committee, Madam Speaker, and I should not be saying this, Madam Speaker, but I just received a letter from the Marigold Development Committee sent to the Honorable Prime Minister and sent to myself as well as the Minister why they want the Prime Minister to intervene in that matter. Madam Speaker, I love this is a lot of just trying to make me look bad. The people of Marigold, I am the parliamentary representative, Madam Speaker. If I have not been involved and they have not been involved in discussion in that development, it means that something has gone wrong. Now, Madam Speaker, I move on. I first heard of the housing project while listening to the evening news on Helen's TV television system on March 5th. And I wrote to the minister.
Honorable Minister for Housing, one member will have the floor at a time. The rules of the House provide clearly the basis upon which interruptions can be made. As if to raise a point of order or to seek some clarification from the member speaking on something he has said. Thank you very much. Shall we proceed, Honorable Member?
Madam Speaker, I am saying that I heard about the development while listening to the evening news on Helen television system while the Minister of Housing was addressing Women in Action at the Castries City Hall. I find it disrespectful to the parliamentary representative of Castries South that the development would be taking place without consultation because the people of Castries South have asked me to represent them, and I need, the same way the police need to respect the MPs in this country, the ministers need to respect the members of parliament for the different countries. I wrote to the minister as early as March 12th, Madam Speaker. Well, yesterday I asked him. He received my letter. He has not responded. And I give him some time to respond. I will not hold him to that. But the point I'm making is the people of Marigold would like to have discussions in that matter. And I'm here to represent them. I'll represent them well. Madam Speaker, Sisera is a case in point that I can go on. That when Sisera was, the people of Conway were moving to Sisera in 1986, the government now started fitting to give these few proper roads in the Mongitong Ringwood area. It took me, Madam Speaker, after 21 years as a resident of Sisera, to beg the St. Lucia Labour Party government to put proper roads in Sisera. Today, it began some 3 months ago, Madam Speaker, sorry, 5 months ago, but up to today we are not finished, so Madam Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Minister of Communications, who I wrote also about this, that both Sisera and Baton Joseph need to be looked into. And I say to the
Member, you have 3 more minutes, given it to complete your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think, Madam Speaker, there is mutual respect between the Minister of Works and myself. And I would employ him to really look, Madam Speaker, into, let us see if we can also give the people of La Croix a bus shelter where they can themselves shelter from the elements as they wait for transportation for both of us. Also, there's a little kiosk, Madam Speaker, in Shonet, asking if we can put up for the people of La Croix as they do the vendoring at the top next to the cross, because it's very important for the tourism sector. Madam Speaker, I also want to think that there'll be a need for us to address some issues in Castries South, in particular next to Monlatop, the area around the Millennium Highway, from getting a water hydrant in there, because if there is a disaster fire, it'll be very hard for us to find service emergency equipment to get there. And I speak for the case of the people there. Madam Speaker, there's a whole lot of activity I can talk about, but I'd also like to say in the last minute that Goodland, Madam Speaker, needs a road on the west end of Goodland leading towards the secondary school, the George Charles Secondary School. It's precisely because of the lack of a road in this area we've had all these problems within that school area. Madam Speaker, Castries South, I know that all the issues that need to be addressed will not be addressed in 1 year. It will not be addressed in one term. I am cognizant of the fact I will not play a politics, but successive governments must build on the work of other governments. The more we stand on shoulders of each other, the taller we stand. And let us stop playing politics in this country, this small country, very few resources. We need to make sure, Madam Speaker, that we use these resources well. Thank you, Madam Speaker.